Hello, and welcome to episode 21 of Modern Media Review. I'm Robin Gibson.
And I'm Sean Golightly.
And whereas last week we were talking about comedian Frankie Boyle, who people deem offensive but isn't, this week we're going to be talking about ex-British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, a person I find genuinely offensive in every respect, and the new documentary on her on BBC called Thatcher, A Very British Revolution, which, using the word revolution, makes it sound quite exciting, doesn't it? But
well, it's almost, you imagine you've got Margaret leading the proletariat to the Winter Palace and tearing down the gates, except it's class war in reverse, really. It's from the top down, pillaging of the middle class and the poor.
That's what class war is, though. Loads of people just don't get that, you know. It's always from the top down. Yeah. But somehow the ruling classes managed to turn it around and make out that it's been waged from the bottom up. Utter nonsense.
There was an interesting quote in episode 2 from Bernard Ingham, who was her old press secretary, and he said, whilst there were, you know, 1 in 10 people unemployed, he did venture to say that perhaps it had been a hard time in 1981. And he said, unfortunately, you know, things had to change. And unfortunately, it does seem that the poor do seem to have to pay a lot of the time. Plus ça change, you know. When has it ever been different?
Well, you say episode 2, but did you actually manage to watch both episodes? I actually thought halfway through episode 1 that I'd be too disgusted, but I did make it to the end.
It's very interesting because I have a hate-hate relationship with Margaret Thatcher.
I noticed that you call her Margaret. I always call her Thatcher.
Thatcher. Yeah, well, I don't know. I think it gives it too much. When you just call her Thatcher, it's almost as if you're giving her the pleasure of hating her, where I think she didn't give a fuck.
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem with this type of documentary is they always try a bit of redemption, don't they?
They do.
Making out that the subjects really had a sort of maybe hidden heart of gold. But that's very difficult with Thatcher. And the polite word they always use is divisive, isn't it? She was a divisive character. But that's just a smokescreen because they say she's divisive, but it's not like Marmite or donkey shagging or something. You can't take it or leave it, can you? They don't tell you that she actually did divide the country with a big sort of axe without actually asking anyone first.
I think the funniest thing was seeing her evolving. There was a Cliff Mitchellmore interview. I mean, I appreciate I'm skipping ahead here a little bit, but if you ever think of Margaret...
I think you better tell people who Cliff Mitchellmore is.
Well, he was a sort of a light entertainment stroke politics sort of guy. Very, very affable, nice man, you know. And she was, I think at the time, wasn't she education secretary when you were interviewing her? And, you know, this was obviously a big thing, a woman cabinet minister. But anyway, they said, you know, oh, how was it, you know, going back to making your maiden speech? And she said, oh, I was as frightened as a kitten.
Yeah, right.
I just thought, oh my God, I can't imagine her ever being frightened as a kitten. In fact, if I was walking down a dark alley and she was lurking down there, I think I'd be frightened as a kitten.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of her male colleagues were frightened of her. I mean, I was going to say, actually, before you skipped on to Cliff Mitchellmore, and why wouldn't you want to skip on to Cliff Mitchellmore? When she was setting herself up to get elected in 1979, she made an election broadcast that wasn't on this documentary, but I dug it out, and it was absolutely unbelievably vague. You think of her as this person with a master plan, but actually she just said a lot of vague and completely, frankly, dishonest stuff, like saying, we're good neighbours, we're concerned for the welfare of others, and we want to be able to say to the old, the sick, the needy and the disabled, don't worry, we'll look after you. But then she doesn't say how they will, and in fact they never did. And she gives it a load of platitudes like, we want to make a country safe to work in and safe to walk in.
What, rather than unsafe, you know? I mean, what's these sort of things? It reminded me of Change UK when they put their manifesto out before they crashed and burned in the Euro elections.
They're gone.
Absolutely gone. That was the same, these sort of like meaningless platitudes, you know, and saying stuff that the negative obviously was never would never be an option. Although if she'd said we're going to sell all the family silver and stuff it in the hands of foreign investors, I guess maybe some people wouldn't have voted for her.
There was a switch, wasn't there, from the sort of culture of consensus and good-natured Tories to, she's like an AC/DC album to me, you know, like she's crude and she's sort of crass. And very shallow, but very, very powerful. So, like, one bang over the head seems quite exciting. But then you start to feel a bit nauseous, and then you listen to the whole catalogue, and it actually makes you retch for weeks on end. I think, you know, she was a big shock to the system, wasn't she?
Oh, it was massive. I mean, pull the ladder up and the devil take the hindmost, which is What made me really pissed off about this trying to humanise Margaret, you know, oh, she wept a lot and she had so much concern for the people within her circle, basically.
What was interesting at the start of it, she wasn't seen as becoming a Tory leader. And there was a quote from her saying, she said, "I didn't set out to do it. I thought I could tackle it as well as anyone else." I mean, that is so sort of shit and accidental. It's like the guy you get in MasterChef who's like been to Thailand and thinks, "I can have a crack at those fancy noodles," and he doesn't do it very well, you know.
I think they were all frankly a bit taken aback, really. And there was this ridiculous thing, even Heseltine was saying it. I mean, he was a picture of bitter, disappointed ambition, wasn't he? Thwarted ambition. Well, they were saying, of course, you know, we were brought up in a certain way that you showed deference to women and all the rest of it. All this sort of like condescending stuff. Well, all these guys were old Etonians, you know, they weren't used to sort of like these brash grammar school people coming through, you know.
The very thought, grammar school people. I mean, Ken Clark actually had a great quote. He said, very simply, "She was one of the most unlikely human beings I ever met." Well, that seems amusing, but she wasn't amusing, was she? You
know? No, definitely not.
They had some little clip of the art keeper at Downing Street, the person who dusts the paintings or whatever, hangs them up. And she was deriding Thatcher for bunging up a load of pictures of Wellington and Nelson, saying she wouldn't even have realised it was an awful picture.
Well, it was so sort of condescending. It was almost as if she'd been down to the Green Shield stamp catalogue showroom and bought one of those sort of like running horses, or the lady with the sort of like golden earrings in green. Do you know what I mean?
They're great pictures. They were slag off the
iconic.
Lady.
They are iconic, mate, you know?
Yeah. A bit that I got really interested in, which isn't really about Thatcher, but was about when they introduced her campaign manager, who was Airy Neave, who's maybe an unknown name nowadays, but a very shady sort of
shadowy character.
Yeah, he'd escaped from Colditz. They actually had a picture of him in a Nazi uniform, which was very confusing, because
I thought he was a Tory sort of fancy dress ball.
Out with Prince Harry, probably. But he didn't. He escaped Colditz, but he didn't escape the Irish National Liberation Army, did he?
No.
Because he blew up his car.
Well, and
he
also,
was in it, which was also unfortunate.
It was very, yeah. But wasn't he also, was it Duncan Campbell had said that, or revealed to Tony Benn, that if James Callaghan lost the election of 79 and Benn was possibly going to be Labour leader, that they should really have him sort of like assassinated.
Neave suggested, yeah. Apparently Neave had told intelligence intelligence had told Duncan Campbell, who told Tony Benn, that Neave planned to have him assassinated if Labour happened to lose and Benn happened to become the leader and Benn happened to be possibly going to win the premiership. That's a lot of supposition for an assassination, isn't it? But those were the days of... People forget those were, or they don't know, those were the days of the sort of secret Tory army where you had these kind of old right-wing guys kind of stockpiling rifles and stuff, you know?
Well, they thought that the communists were at the gates, really, didn't they? And
she used some phrase like a nightmare of poverty and socialism. She always put the two together. None of your champagne, you know, even though we all know there'll be enough to go round if there's proper socialism. Anyway, they gave a big up for her rise to fame, calling her an outsider who rose to the pinnacle of power, which I thought was a bit much. I mean, Nelson Mandela, yeah, that's a real outsider who rises to the absolute pinnacle of power. Thatcher was just an ambitious, single-minded, nasty piece of work who rose to the pinnacle of power.
Well, married into money for a starter, which made things a little bit easier.
As
she bemoaned how difficult it was having a townhouse in Chelsea and a country pile where one really needed servants.
There's no servants. They had to sweep out their own swimming pool. What a catastrophe. And then there was all this kind of stuff about like how she was a woman, which I dispute, right? Obviously she was a woman, but you know, Shirley Williams was on saying it was very tough for women and Thatcher was there doing the ironing in her spare time. But I think she actually became sort of gender fluid and became a new sort of inhuman gender to beat the males. And you couldn't rise up that far through the ranks if you really were a woman then, could you?
Well, she had to be a superman in a way, you know, more manly than the men, you know, go around kicking their heads in sort of
cabinet
meetings.
She had to alpha male them.
Totally alpha male them.
But she didn't. There was a great TV Q&A and there was a woman in the audience who was called Mrs. Booth and they were talking about when she was education minister and she'd cut back on the school milk and she actually just used the phrase, said to Thatcher, "You're hurting kids." And I thought, that's it. She's someone who doesn't mind hurting kids. That sums her up, really. You seen that bit when she was on a US trip and she gave that speech saying, opportunity is nothing unless it includes the right to be unequal.
Well, this is a whole view of capitalism, really, in that capitalism isn't supposed to be equal. You're supposed to have these sort of like unequal, you know, otherwise it doesn't work. You can't all share the pie.
No, obviously not. She said something like about that phrase about people saying don't cut down the tall poppies and let them grow. And she says, I would say, let our children grow tall and some taller than others. And she stuck to this all the way through, right? I mean, the Soviets called her the Iron Lady. That helped her a lot because she just took it. It was meant to be an insult, wasn't it?
Yeah.
She just took it on board as her new personality. She never flinched, even though it went on through 79, 80, 81, through the two episodes, and it was just cuts, cuts, tax cuts, spending cut, tax cuts, spending cuts, riots all over Britain in 1981. She just didn't flinch. All she did was sack people who didn't agree with her.
I mean, it made me laugh because it's always easy when you're isolated from all these things. It's like Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake. She was basically destroying large sectors of manufacturing. She had a political axe to grind, basically. Did you see where they gate-crashed the Brighton Tory conference?
Yeah.
And this was just a typical sort of like case in point, and it was, you know, jobs, not cuts, and all this type of thing. And they said, oh, it's no surprise. It's raining outside. I'm surprised they wanted to come in. And also, she said, it's always better where the Tories were. When I was thinking, yeah, it is a bit like that, isn't it? If you cut the top end rate of tax and you line each other's pockets, it will be a bit more comfortable wherever you are.
Very comfortable. Except when they get free range potatoes thrown at them. As Bernard Ingham, her hairy eyebrowed press secretary, mentioned in a bizarre interview.
Well, it was quite interesting because obviously there was a fair bit of egg pelting, but the free range, I was just wondering.
What is a free range potato?
I just wondered if they'd gone to sort of like Virginia Water and it was the, you know, National Union of Waitrose Shoppers at sort of like chucking samphire and quinoa at her, do you know what I mean?
Well, it was very good because when it got to this bit with the sort of gloomy bit where no one knew if they were doing, the Tories didn't know if they were really had gone too far. They literally had shots of them destroying British industry, you know, like chimney stacks being pulled down, and they had some quite sort of dignified manager from a factory that was on one week on and one week off to keep going. And he just said, I don't care what they say, the government isn't standing where I'm bloody well standing. And you got the impression he wouldn't be standing there for much longer.
No, as it was all tumbling round his ears. No, it was an incredible ability just to sort of like let it all roll off her back. And at the same time, you had these acolytes saying, oh, but Margaret thought long into the night and, you know, was wringing her hands and weeping. The only two times I ever saw Margaret weeping was when she got ousted from office in 1990 and she wept for herself. And when little Mark got lost in his racing car when he was tootling around the desert, you know, probably trying to flog arms to some nomads, you know.
Well, the thing is, they were just bashing everyone. I mean, I did notice when they were on the sort of trail, I don't know what they were doing, not campaigning, for some, maybe they were masochists, they were just visiting Glasgow and they had a security, they had our security guy saying, oh, we are hated everywhere. And you saw them in Glasgow with a big demonstration and you thought, I looked in the background and the biggest banner, biggest union banner was the National Union of Hosiery and Knitwear Workers. And I thought, they were doing it. They're not exactly nutters, are they, the knitwear workers?
Hard bastards, that mob.
No, they were just doing it to everyone, and they did not stop. And there was this bunch of people around, as you said, these acolytes who surrounded her with fawning adoration, admiration, actually. You know, like Norman Tebbit being the most glaring of them.
Norman Tebbit was like, when you saw his eyes, they were burning with belief. You know, he's a true believer. Almost religious fervour he had about changing the country. And
well, he's thinking about knowing the greats by their surname.
I don't know how he managed to spit out. I mean, he said Churchill, obviously, because they both seemed to be sort of like so hung up about being Churchillian. Like, I don't know how they spat out Attlee. That must have stuck in the craw.
And he mentioned Wellington as well, didn't he? But, but somehow, yet again, he couldn't bring himself to do the best surname, great known by surname, which is Mandela. That was never going to get anywhere near his lips, was it?
Well, and he said all the greats known by their last name. And I was thinking, yeah, like Stalin and Hitler. You know.
Yeah, they're the bad guys, Sean. I don't think he was going to come out with any of them.
Sutcliffe, Leatherface.
Also, Thatcher. Tebbit was interesting because he admitted that he didn't think they could. He said, I thought she was capable, but I didn't know if he could convince the electorate. The shame of it.
Well, I also think that he probably didn't think that if you put it out there exactly as he wanted it, that they would get elected, because he compared society to, like, racehorses.
Yeah.
Almost like he had to breed out the weaklings, you know, wean them out and, you know, let them falter.
Darwinism,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's sort of like Darwinian eugenics type of programme. Quite frightening, really, if you take it to its natural conclusion, which I think they're quite willing to do, really.
Once she'd got rid of the sort of what they called the wets, the sort of moderates, it was such a bunch of totally mental nutters, wasn't it? I mean, Keith Joseph defies belief. You saw him making a speech, didn't you, to a lot of students, deceptively saying what a great writer Marx was and what a revolutionary, influential writer he was, because he was supported by a capitalist and he didn't have to do a day's work in his life. Very clever stuff, that.
I mean, his nickname was the Mad Monk. And there was a religious fervour about these guys. You know, they really believed this stuff.
It's weird, isn't it? Because when you think, well, Ingham, who is supposed to have some insight, he actually said her greatest quality was she didn't want to be loved. And yet, they all loved her.
Well, I mean, Alan Clark, I think some of them had some sort of, like, weird sexual hang-up about Margaret, dating back to the nursery and nanny and that sort of stuff. Very weird. And Alan Clark as well also said, that's a brilliant put down of, you know, the way that Heseltine put down Margaret. What was it? He said that she was from a certain social strata, looking very much down his nose at her.
Yeah.
Well, Clark, from a further step up the ladder than Heseltine, Clark obviously had his own castle, as you do when you're a Tory.
yes, of course, and with a moat.
With a moat, yeah.
Which you have to clear.
You do have to get, and take expenses for it. That Heseltine was the type of man that bought his own furniture.
Shocking.
It is shocking, absolutely. I mean, all mine's inherited.
Oh, mine is in a way too.
Yeah, from a second-hand shop.
There were lots of people on there trying to make out, though, that she had a sort of caring human side, weren't there? But most of them were just their own staff, which makes total sense. And David Owen, who was the Labour guy who went on to form the SDP and then disappear, he sort of nailed it because he said that she was very good and thoughtful to her inner circle. Like a boss is good to staff to get them to work a bit harder, isn't it? But he said she didn't understand there was a certain percentage of the population that needed to be helped.
Well, and more than that, he said probably about 20% of them, which probably would have caused palpitations with Margaret, you know, that you could have 20, how do you get rid of these 20%?
Yeah, that's probably what that's what they were trying to do, isn't it? Or have them, as you said the other day, have them working in the sort of, instead of working in a mine, working in a mining heritage display.
Well, basically, that's what's
pretending
happened,
to be miners, yeah.
Yeah. What do you replace all these jobs with?
Well, Uber drivers and stuff like that, you know. Just Eat, Deliveroo, those sort of things.
Well, mate, get on your bike and get on your bike and find a job, mate. That's what I say.
Well, the job is on your bike now. It is on your bike, isn't
Deliveroo.
It? Deliveroo. There was a lot of parallels, I think, going away from the actual history of it, but there's a lot of parallels with what's going on now, going right back to the start, before she even became Prime Minister, when she was on TV, and she used this very casual phrase about the school milk, which she abolished the free school milk, and said, don't blame me for knocking off the milk for over-11s. That was the Labour government who did that. So already, this was the blaming the previous Labour government thing. It's not a new concept.
Well, it's pretty handy, really, especially when we had the financial crash that in no way was linked to deregulation in the city or anything like that. Capitalism gone mad was the bloody Labour Party.
And as Neil Kinnock said, he made a couple of good remarks. He said, for the first time, Tory Party became an ideological party. And he also said another thing that reminded me of UKIP and the Brexit Party, where he said they had a powerful message because they weren't trying to restore the past, but they were trying to invoke an imagined past.
No,
it's that thing of how great things were in the 40s/50s/1870s or whatever era they want to.
Which was a load of old bollocks, basically. I mean, it's like, you know, talking about Victorian times being fantastic when you couldn't fucking breathe in London because it was full of smog. Every industrial city was full of rickets and diphtheria. You know,
cholera. You name it, you could get it.
Yeah,
rickets is back, by the way.
No way.
It is. I read a big article about it the other day.
Brilliant. How can it be when everyone's shopping in food banks for free?
Loads of vitamin D there, can't you?
Ah, it's a joke. And especially as, look, all you have to do is go and beg and you're earning £600 a day, man. There's
and
no excuse
got a
for it.
Two-bedroom house too. No excuse at all. Going through these parallels, another interesting one was that, again, Ken Clark. I hate quoting all these Tories. I hope they get some more opposition-type characters in than just Neil Kinnock and Shirley Williams and the National Union of Hosiery and Knitwear Workers, really, because they're not the heavyweights, are they, like Scargill or someone? Clark said about the leadership election then, politics is interesting because you rarely get the result that you expect, and that's what's going on now with the Tories, isn't it?
Well, it's very interesting because Heseltine was the sort of golden boy, Bojo-type character, really, and he was widely expected to be the next leader, but obviously didn't work out for him, and this is going to be a weird election.
I think you know who's going to win the Tory leadership this time round will be that unknown guy. You know the guy.
Yeah, definitely the unknown one. Not the opium smoker.
The guy that put his name up yesterday.
I missed that. Who's he?
That guy. No one knows who he is. His major claim to being an interesting runner is that no one knows who he is. I'll find out his name later and tell people in the next podcast.
Hey, we haven't done a time check.
Oh, no, it's 16... No, it's not. It's... Yeah. It's
1839, just where Jacob Rees-Mogg would love to be.
You also pointed out that Thatcher had made some remark about there aren't any pennies from heaven.
Oh.
Which reminded me exactly of what Theresa May said about her, there's no magic money tree.
I mean, it's almost as if they'd taken a sort of like very poor template of Margaret and just stuck it straight on her back. Do you know what I mean?
The more I look at this, the more I think, as you say, it was just a poor, weak sort of G.I. Joe imitation of Action Man.
Well, she was a sort of Coronation Street version of Margaret, wasn't she? Sort of like Bette Lynch with her leopard print shoes and all the rest of it.
As we will see as the series ends, and I don't know how many episodes there are, Thatcher cries at the end, and she cries for herself. And that's when Theresa May was crying the other day on the podium at Downing Street. That's all she was crying for as well.
Yeah, it was herself and blaming us.
Yeah, well, I felt she was telling us off. You know, when she said at the end, and I wanted to serve the country that I love.
Unlike you lot of bastards.
Yeah, it sounded like we were getting told off.
Yeah, absolutely.
School-marmish, wasn't it?
Margaret was so like that, hectoring you as if you were doing something wrong, disagreeing with her, you know? The one thing about that pennies from heaven, which really, really hacked me off, was this was in a speech that she made to the city in Guildhall. And it panned across this expanse of a lot of blokes dressed up in penguin suits, smoking massive cigars and, you know, reeking of wealth and saying, well, you know, these pennies just don't drop from heaven. These pennies are earned on earth. And you looked around at these fellas and you thought, well, none of those buggers has done a day's work in their life. And yet it is literally raining pennies on them.
She had this great trick of being able to get people to believe this nonsense.
It's extraordinary.
She must have done, because they voted for her. I think she got away with a lot more than she expected. I think she sort of floats through it, obviously batting people aside so she can get away, but I just think she probably couldn't believe how far she could push things so quickly, because Labour were so busy infighting and forming new parties like the SDP and expelling militant members, which... it's sort of what's going on at the moment with Labour, isn't it?
Well, it's like so many things. It's all sleight of hand and trickery. The only reason that people don't go out and help themselves to the contents of other people's houses or shops or all the rest of it is the fear of being caught. Once you realise that there aren't any coppers about and no one's going to catch you anyway, the whole place will fucking explode. Do you know what I mean?
What are you trying to say here?
What I'm saying is that, like Trump and Margaret, if you push forward these radical policies, which they were, totally changing the way that the country was, who is actually going to stop you?
No, no one did.
No.
I'm very concerned about the way that you keep referring to these people by their first names, like Margaret and Boris. Next thing you'll be calling Farage, Nigel.
Nigel, yeah.
And then we'll know exactly where your true colours are, mate.
It's slightly insidious, isn't it? Maybe.
Well, it is for you. You speak for yourself. What I was going to say is, you know, we've only seen two episodes of this. It's only got to the point where she's had to sack half the cabinet and everyone's really worried about, have they done the right thing? And they weren't doing the right thing. It was all going to pot. Inflation was through the roof. Unemployment was through the roof.
But the great day is around the corner, mate, for all of us.
Yeah, what happens next is that the Falklands War saves the day for her.
It's handy, that, isn't it?
And then after that, we're going to presumably have the miners' strike, which is the defining thing of her whole period in power, with her battle against Arthur Scargill and the miners, who was her absolute nemesis.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly where I hope. It'd be brilliant if they got Scargill on. Is he still alive?
Do you know what? I haven't heard from him for years. He's gone to ground. Weren't they trying to chuck him out of that Grace and Favour flat that the NUM had for him in the Barbican?
Give the bloke a roof over his head, Jesus. Now, do you think, I was thinking that reading that Éireann Eve stuff kind of got my imagination running right, and I thought we could do a sort of alternative ending, like they have in these new TV shows, like...
very trendy, that, yeah.
Yeah, it's very trendy, yeah. And we could have it like, she wins the election, Jim Callaghan resigns as the Labour Party leader, Tony Benn takes over, Éireann Eve has him assassinated, and...
Military coup,
yeah, headed up by Airy and Norman Tebbit. Then they mismanage the North Sea oil funds, spend all the money on safari parks, something like that, and we end up in Venezuela.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, didn't we mismanage the North Sea oil anyway?
Oh yeah, they did, yeah. But a military government led by Éireann Eve would mismanage it much worse.
But they're sure they'd have very smart uniforms, Robin.
Yeah, that's our ending. And I think we'd better end the podcast because it can go on for quite a while. Not as long as Thatcher. At 6:48 PM, we're going to say, listen to us on YouTube and subscribe on YouTube. You can also get the podcast on iTunes and Spotify. And we've got a website, modernmediareview.com. And it's all on there, along with a lot of other stuff. And we're on Facebook and Twitter, if you're interested in that kind of stuff. And thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with something else, I suppose.
Well, we'll think of something.
Think of something, yeah.
Okay, so cheers for that.
Okay, thanks a lot, and good night. Bye.